You're listening to After Images, a podcast for cinephiles that takes a deep dive into moving images. Each episode features a special guest who is invited to explore a film of their choice. After Images is hosted by film writers Franck Bouleg and Marisa C. Hayes.
For our 16th episode, we are joined by filmmaker Lucille Adzi-Alilovic to discuss Mysteries of Lisbon, a film by Raul Ruiz based on the 1854 novel of the same title. Filmed primarily in Portugal in 2010, the film moves across several European countries at the turn of the 19th century, while the Chilean filmmaker weaves a complex web of interrelated stories and flashbacks within flashbacks. The main character appears to be an orphan boy in a school, where a priest has taken him under his wing. From there, the narration enters a labyrinthian journey that finally returns to the boy after many twists, revelations, and multiple identities.
After obtaining an undergraduate degree in art history and film studies, Lucille Adzi-Alilovic wrote and directed the short film La Bouche de Jean-Pierre, Jean-Pierre's Mouth, in 1996, which was selected for Un Certain Regard at the Cannes Film Festival. She then wrote and directed the feature-length films Innocence, 2004, Evolution, co-written with Alante Cavaite, 2014, and Earwig, co-written with Jeff Cox, 2021. She also directed the short films Good Boys, Nectar, and De Natura. Her latest feature is currently in post-production.
Welcome to After Images podcast. We are delighted to have you with us today to discuss Raul Ruiz's Mysteries of Lisbon.
So thank you very much for this invitation to participate to this podcast. And it gave me the opportunity to rewatch this absolutely wonderful, amazing film by Raul Ruiz, the Chilean director who spent a lot of his life in France and made a lot of films there. He made like more than 100 films, which is absolutely amazing. And I think he was all the time, every single day, working on a film. Sometimes in a week, he was making maybe 3 films at the same time. Among all these films, I have only seen maybe 7 of them, mainly films he made in the 80s, like The City of Pirates, Pirates, sorry for my pronunciation, not Pirates, Pirates, The Three Crowns of a Sailor, for instance, which made on me a very, very strong impression, because of their so playful, inventive cinematography, ways of narration, this world that he had created. And then I saw one of his latest films he made in 2010 or some, or 11 maybe. He died just after that. So this film is the one I would like to talk about, Mysteries of Lisbon. And I'm so moved by the fact that it's absolutely a masterpiece and is mainly the last film he did. So that's an amazing way of... last film. Mm. There was a few more after that has been like post-mortem because he was making films all the time and had projects and so on. So, but I think it was the last one he did from beginning to end himself before he died.
Mm. And before we move into some of the really beautiful structural and cinematographic aspects of this film, may I ask you what specifically about The Mysteries of Lisbon, what made you choose this film? What does it mean to you personally and also as a filmmaker yourself?
I think, as I said, I guess first of all, it's the invention, the playful filmmaking way of making films that I love so much in general with Raoul Ruiz, and especially in this one, because maybe in this one it's also mixed to something more classical in a way. The narration could be in a way said classical, and it's very Romanesque. It's a lot of enigma, mysteries, and a lot of stories within stories, and is so I think the combination of some amazing ways of structuring the film, of giving some surreal poetic approaches, and then this kind of melodrama, classical type of stories. I think it's very kind of unique, and it touched me really very much. I was really moved by the. Also, there is some kind of. I always like Gothic, and it's a Gothic stories, but also with a lot of humor, a lot of irony. And I think this combination of things, of mood and elements, and the surreal elements that are still in it, this is something that really, really was very appealing to me. And I guess this is one why I really love so much that film. No, I wish I could do such a film. But also there is a pleasure of a story and a pleasure of a way of making, of telling it. And the combination of both of these aspects are really striking and hypnotic. The film is really hypnotic. And the film is very long because there is the theatrical cut of his film, which is 4 hours and a half, which seems to be so so quick, so brief. And also there is a cut of like a TV series, which is longer, 6 hours, I think. But the one I rewatched was a theatrical editing.
You mentioned the hypnotic quality of the film. I was very struck personally by the fact that it feels very much like a dream, something of a dream in which you dive and you go deeper and deeper and sometimes come back to the surface. It's always going back, this up and down. And this is really something that grabs us as the audience, as the person watching the film. I have the feeling that this is also something that I find in your own cinema, this dreamlike quality. Could this be partly the reason why you're attracted to this work by Ruiz?
Absolutely. I think even if it's based on situations that are realistic, more or less, also because it's a period film set in very early 19th century, so it looks like once upon a time, like a tale, and this society, these rules, this are so far away from us that it looks like a fairy tale in a way. It's a dark fairy tale, and the fact that he's playing with a lot of enigmatic characters, mysteries, as the title said. And always new surprises, new enigma, story within the story. There is also a mixed, a kind of a drift from present to the past, and then to the future. Somehow a play with the time and space, and also some elements very much like on a side it's a realist, it's kind of realistic, and on another side is really playing with surreal elements, with very strange elements for the mise en scène, and also there is what also gives it a feeling of dream. I think it's also because there is an important element in the film, which is a theater, a miniaturist theater, with the toy, the main one of the main character, a boy, the orphan, has received, and all along the film, this Ruiz is using this theater, this miniaturist theater, to for sometimes to link two sequences or to make a kind of comment, and also the way it's filmed, the film itself, with very long shot but wide shots in distance. There is very few close-ups in the film, so you have the impression of watching a theater in a theater play, in a way, in a some puppets, even more because these characters, they have to deal with obscure forces and laws and people which you very often don't see. And it's like there is a the masters which are still behind. Maybe the masters are the kings and the queens, when these characters are just living in their shadow, and they are like usually second-born children of wealthy families, and they don't have access to the wealth because they are just a second one, and so they, yeah. And then the filmmaking with this long, very choreographic shots, wide shots, make it look, if you were looking at some theater plays or even like a ballet, because it's a real musical choreography, not only because of the music itself, which is great, but also from, yes, the movement of the characters and the actors within the frame, and also the camera movements, the travelings, which are very musical and very obsessive in a way. And I guess all that gives a feeling of a dream.
I hope that we will come back to the theme of children, which is so important in your work as well. But I just wanted to maybe remind us of a really beautiful quote that deals with this theme of looking and the layers of looking that you've just described. This is from the English translation in the subtitles. But there's a moment when there's a discussion of disappearing from the eyes of others, but that our own eyes follow us wherever we go. And I think that this really speaks to this very kind of, it's like a Russian nesting doll, the layers of stories within this film, and the very complicated layers of relationships and what people are running towards and away from, and what they are looking at, and who is doing the looking. I really love that.
Yes, yeah, it's a beautiful quote, and the fact that, well, there are many characters in the film, but you can say that there are mainly two main ones, and one is a orphan boy that is in quest, that is looking for his identity, who is his parents, and beyond that, much more than that, who is he? And also the other main character, the priest, who is linked to this boy, also is in. Well, it's also about identity, and in the film there is a lot of false identity or mask, or the many characters have different names, play different roles, hide themselves behind some, so it's a, the film is a bit of a quest of a identity, but this identity is always, how do you say, slip away, and other, so yeah, it's like the Russian dolls, when inside the box there is another one, or inside the person there is another one, and in this one another mystery, and so on and so on. So it's like a also a kind of sort of theatrical game with different masks, and like a, yeah, like a dance, a ballet with mask, And then still this this quest and this character, which comes the boy who the one who then he will be a grown up and so on, because the film is about a few decades, and but it's all about his eye, and it's a lot about looking at. You always have characters that are watching, listening. For instance, the maids, the servant, but also this boy, or this grown up later. And then it has also to do with the theater and the fact that this character is playing with his toy, the theater. And yes, there is always eyes, who your own eyes, who are looking upon you.
And I think that this notion of multiple identities makes perfect sense on the stage, as if it is actors who are performing roles depending on the stage on which they are, depending on the performance that they are giving at a certain point. And yeah, I think it's connected in the film also with two elements, which are, on the one hand, the multiplicity of languages. It's not a film with just Portuguese. I mean, there's a lot of French and other languages mixed in. Italian, for instance. And also it's connected with the notion of exile, which is very much at the core of Wyss's own life. And I think that one can feel this in the film. I don't know if you agree with this.
No, absolutely. I haven't thought of a film that way, but now that you say it, it's obvious. And it's a very much a European story. And I think it's also something I really enjoy very much in the film. But you're right, it's about exile, because most of his characters have to leave, to run away, to hide, etc. And there is this continent, the America, which of course linked to Portugal at the time still, and that is not there, but it's out of the frame, but also has very importance. And for someone like Raul Ruiz, coming from that continent, and probably that, that was very, anyway, I think Chile, maybe like Argentina also, and Brazil are so linked to Europe and to these specific countries of Portugal, Spain, or France, and that, makes a lot of sense that he's interested in mixing these different countries together somehow. And it's a story of exile, that's true.
And earlier you had mentioned the 19th century, and I couldn't help but think often of Les Misérables when I was watching this film, and particularly the fate of children that's been decided before they are even at an age to consent or to make any sort of decision about anything. It's as if part of their path is already established for them by events that they have no control over. Of course, this is affecting many characters in the film, but particularly that of children who didn't necessarily know their parents, who their parents are, etc. But thinking about this very important role, the central character of Joao, who we meet first as a child, I immediately also thought of your films that feature so heavily children and their relationships. And do you think that that's part of the reason that you also have an interest in this film? Is that part of it? Or
I'm sure I just realized it when I was rewatching it and thinking that you probably will ask me why. And I realize how much, it's about an orphan or orphans. We've have to deal with adults or laws that are mysterious, enigmatic, and phantasmagoric somehow. And this, that's very, very close to me in a way. And also this dreamy elements, it's on the border, on the frontier of reality and dream, and that's also something that I really loved very much, and feel something I'd like to to do myself in my films. And so I can see why, in general, I love so much Raoul Ruiz, and specifically this film, which is even more subtle, maybe, and complex, and always, always, always mysterious, and always atmospheric, and always. I think also the repetition, the obsession, the fig, for instance. So it's over different countries and decades, and a lot of different locations, but they somehow seems a bit the same, or never exactly the same, and there is a kind of obsessive elements, and this obsessive aspect of the film also is very appealing to me, because I think it's with the motifs echoes all over the years and places, which is very somehow both scary and exciting, because it gives a kind of a coherence to the world and to the film, of course.
Yeah. I had read that you lived in Morocco until you were around 17 years old. Is that correct? So I also thought about this different perception that one has, because I've also spent much of my life in different countries, and I think that there's a certain kinship, perhaps, that happens between people who have lived with this experience as well, with multilingualism, different landscapes and cultures.
Yes, certainly, and yes, I can. I think, and also there is another element, I think, in Raoul Ruiz's films. I don't know if it has to do with him specifically, with his life, the fact that he lived so many years in exile, but in Europe, in different countries in Europe. And in my case, in my, let's say, family or background, there was a dream of Europe. My parents came from Europe, from France and from Yugoslavia, and we lived in Morocco. And they had always this dream of Europe, which was become more and more a kind of dream, or you know, it was their countries didn't even, in the case of my father, at the end didn't even exist by itself. So it was like a sort of, and they were, I think they had some kind of happy memories as children living in these countries. And of course, these countries have changed a lot and so on. So there is, I think, this a bit of that in Raoul Ruiz, and maybe the way he sees places, locations, you didn't really, well, in this case of it's Lisbon, it's France, Paris, it can be Italy, but in other films it's an island, it's some imaginary places that feel like maybe it's Europe, maybe not exactly. And I think that is something that I feel very close to my let's say experience or way of approaching. The territories and the landscape means more than the exact place where it is, where the landscapes are. So, and even in a film like this one, this Lisbon, which we never see of almost never outside of of houses, castles, so on, a very few, or when we see it, it's like a forest, a woods, and it's also a repetitive motif, this outside, and it's mostly inside, inner spaces, and even when it's a bit of the outside, it looks like very much like a inner space, and that could be in different places, countries, you don't really know, you are not sure where they belongs to.
That's very interesting, because I know that he had a very strong interest for cartography, and one of his films from the beginning of the 1980s was titled The Territory. And I was wondering if perhaps this relationship to space, which might or might not be linked to the fact that he lived for such a long time in exile, might explain partly the meta-fictional nature of his films, that they themselves become a bit artificial. The artificiality is always present in his films. I mean, you always see the structure, and you have the feeling that the structure, to a certain point, that is the territory of this of the film itself, becomes more important than the content, than the story itself. I mean, you've mentioned the films from the 1980s, and I think this is very clear in his pirate movies, that the structure is so overpowering. Is this also something that you felt watching Mysteries of Lisbon, or did you have the feeling that perhaps it was more balanced between the structure and the story? And how do you feel about this notion of cartography?
Yeah, I think in the case of Mysteries of Lisbon, maybe because he find out some this material, the novel which the film is based on, that was a mean for him to use again the structural aspect of usually used in his other films. But in this case, there is also maybe the real. Yeah, the substance, the reality of these people, this time, this role they have to live with. I think, well, he hasn't. I think it's a mixture in this film. It's a different. It's less structural. I mean, all the structure is very much there, but it's somehow slightly hidden by the stories, the characters, the apparently reality of his world and this pool and the depth of his people of these characters. So I think it's maybe the maturity or the chance also to have to find this material to which is was somehow perfect for him and for maybe and also because after all these films he did and I don't know the very last he did before this one. So I don't know how much he maybe now was so he has go through so many experiments and so many structural games that maybe he could have this in his background and not and do something else maybe. So this is also why it's like if he has reached a land or a place or a territory again, or to finally having let some roots grow there. Because I think also maybe it has to do with the fact that because he was not living in the country where he was born and how his parents were born, I'm not so sure about his parents. Maybe they came very got from Europe quite recently too. This I don't know, but nevertheless, I think he has the way he could approach these other countries, places is also through literature, through theater, and that's a way. And I think he's such a in love with theater, with literature, and the way he use writers and books and novels is amazing because they are never always very playful and inventive and personal, whether they are some are better than others, but it's very I think that's the way to know the world for him or to be in connection with this new places where he was is through literature and mainly and theater also but and this is also something very touching, very that has. I don't see any other example of that in cinema, and even when there is like amazing adaptation from books, in his case, I think he is very free with that. He adapting Proust, for instance, or is a I don't know, it could be intimidating, but he's. I think he also the way he use time and memories and his films make him certainly a very very good reader of Proust and but I think he has no complex. I think he felt free with his all that and he felt at home with all with literature I think and it's very interesting for someone who was so cinematic. cinematography.
No. And speaking of cinematic, what do you think about the visual compositions that almost become like tableau vivant, but then are joined with this beautiful camera movement, often this kind of horizontal tracking that's just gorgeous?
And circular too.
It made me think a little bit of Max Ophüls. The mixture of theater music in a way, and these musical movements of camera, and they are not, it's not theater at all, but still it is also in a way, it's like you say, tableau vivant. But so it's I think that the camera is so, the work of the camera is so impressive in that term, so such a masterpiece of cinematic, pure cinematic. It's that was also something, so because sometimes from the films I saw, at least Harold Royce was experimenting a lot of things, and it was sometimes a bit not, so precisely done or whatever. In this film, everything is so perfect. The it's really like choreography, and the camp with the camera, the way the actors come out of the frame. Sometimes there is this very foreground, the action is in the background at the same time, and then suddenly the opposite, and it's all these tricks he used to play, maybe more obviously and more for the pleasure of it. In this case, he really used it for the narration, and I was totally struck by the cinematography of that film, and I think it's not only the cinematographer, because I think it is, I think he find a great cinematographer to do this film, but I think it's because I read that he asked him to see some of his previous films, among them the one from Proust, The Time Revealed, and I think it was really, he made the decisions of many things, and then he find people to make it happen so perfectly. He had the means also and the time, because nevertheless he did it quite quickly, this long film. And also I read that he had some surgery during the shooting, and so I don't know how he made this so perfect film. But there is a perfection in the movement, in the dance, and it's really part of a so great charm and attraction of this film. It's the how musical and musical is the film, and you never have a moment which is weaker, and I can't, I couldn't believe it.
It's so incredibly striking, and I feel that sometimes there's this negative tendency to say that a film is just aesthetic or that there's a certain visual pleasure. But in this case, as you mentioned, it's always reinforcing the narrative, and it also creates a sensorial, very kinesthetic experience in addition to the visual, and also in the way that he plays with sound. I don't just mean to focus on the movement, but in this sense, I feel that, as you mentioned, the film is very cohesive, even though I know that Ruiz didn't like the word continuity. I think also in terms of narrative, but there is a certain continuity in this experience, I think, of really diving into this narrative in a sensorial way, thanks to those elements that you described.
Yes, but I think that the continuity is very much in the way it makes the in the filmmaking, and the this repetitive elements, but like in the music, and then you have some motive that comes back with the variation and so on, and also, for instance, there is many voiceovers in the film from different characters, and they are very much like a song in a way. They also very musical, the way they are mixed, and the way the actors talk are like an hypnotic, like from an hypnotist hypnotizer, like the so that's also part of of an immersive process, way of film, and it's very, it's very coherent in terms of of lighting, of colors, and and also the way that the characters are talking, which is not really, which is not naturalistic and very precise, but not what you would call theatrical, but really a kind of it's also the dialogue themselves, the way they are written. I just can guess that because many times it's not in French, for instance, but unless there is a music in every element, and in this way it's there is a continuity of tools for the film that make it so coherent when the story is very broken in a way, broken in pieces, like a puzzle. And you have to, and you never got totally the whole image. It's like fragments and with repetition, with different, slightly difference, and so on. So it's that way, it's not like a very, well, it was again this idea of a main one conflict in the film and so on. It's many, but there is a currency of this, the rules of this world, the rules these people have to this kind of honor codes or codes of honor and appearance against the desire and love and passion and all that is I guess the main theme, one of the main theme of the film, and make it so coherent at the same time. It's like pieces of puzzle, and that's also the charm of the film, because you are always in looking for trying to get almost you see that you are going to learn something, the truth, and then there is another trap behind and another door and so on. So it's a mastery in storytelling, in fact, very not conventional way.
And this almost choreographic way of weaving the film together, is this something you're trying to do in your own filmmaking? Did you think that you've been influenced by some of the filmmaking of Wyss?
It's funny because I never thought really consciously that I was, but by rethinking of him and because of his talk and some of it before that, I really realized how much I was, and also because nowadays people are not talking so much about calories anymore, which is, I hope it will be back. But I realized, yeah, how much I have been impressed by his films, and I've just, I mean, he's such a master. Yeah, I can just have him as a kind of inspiration. I think it's very inspiring. He was very inspired, and it's very inspiring. And yes, I'd love to be able to have some of his this aspect of a musical, choreographic way of telling, and very visually by the presence, the body of the actors, the costume, the way they move in space, and not. But in this case, for instance, there is also a lot of dialogues, which is something very difficult for me to be able to do. But nevertheless, it's a lot about, you could switch off the dialogues in a way and just watch them dancing, moving into the space, and it tells a lot by itself. Also, the physical presence of the actor, the costume, the way you use the space, the light, how sometimes you have empty space. I love it's funny because there is both like empty spaces sometimes, or very obscure, very dark zones, and in other moments it's a lot of props and costumes, and the balance between the two aspects also is very strong, and very interesting. It gives, I guess, even if you are not conscious really at the moment, because you are taken by your story itself, that it surprises you all the time, and it makes surprises all the time in the frame, which is very, like, yeah, it's like great lessons of cinema.
Do you know why we are going through a certain moment with a certain lack of interest for Raul Ruiz? Do you have any idea why people are not talking so much about him right now?
I don't know, at some, like maybe at the end of the 90s, it was like everyone was talking about him, and also because he made a lot of films in France with Frenchmen here, and they were released. And I think his films are now, I think there's a lot of, I mean, it's so much about, how to say, giving lessons or having films with very simple, direct, I don't know how to say that in English, but I think the fact that his films are very dreamy, so realistic, not something. I think it's not the mood. I think they are complex, and if you are looking for simple stories, something to talk about, and to, you know, like with not of intents before them. And I think the strange thing is for with such a film, I think when you for the people who are watching a lot of series and that. So much in love with stories and narrative and characters. This is a film they can find all that, but also they can find a great something more, which is something has to do with really pure cinema, and so playful and so inventive at the same time. So yes, I hope it will be kind of rediscovered by the young generations. But I think the fact that and maybe the fact that he made also films not only in France, but in other European countries, in Portugal, in different languages, maybe because he is not French and the cinema is like what you would say, it doesn't really totally fit to the French landscape of cinema. So maybe in France at least, I don't know in other how he's perceived in other countries. I'm not so sure he's very well known in the States, for instance, not even maybe so much in the UK, but I think he really totally deserved to be somehow rediscovered, and I think program and of his retrospective, and that's a long, long time since I haven't seen a. I think this French cinematic should do a retrospective of his work. And
A year long because of so many works.
exactly. Yeah, that would be, imagine that. That would be, so maybe that's the thing. It's maybe so prolific that it's hard to catch and how it from, I don't know. And yes, I think the fact that he made this. Very surrealism. I think it's not at all a French thing, even if we had a time ago, and people are so much into genre films and it's like things in boxes, and he's really not. He doesn't fit in the box. He's always breaking the box. I think I would not be able to say what kind of genre is his films from the 80s, for instance. Fantasy somehow, but they are not horror films, they are not, you know, what they call. So I think also because of that, there is a moment where he has kind of slightly disappeared in the.
And speaking of this complexity, it reminded me of a quote that I once read from Ruiz, who said that he likes to edit his films so that only one or two, or I'm sorry, he likes to film so that only one or two edits are possible. And for me, if it were linear storytelling, I could understand what this means. But because of this dreamy complexity that we've been discussing, it remains very abstract for me how one could go about creating a film that with only imagining one or two possible edits And since we haven't talked about the editing yet, I thought maybe this would be a way into to that.
Yeah, I'm surprised too, because I would have thought that he would be playing with very much with the material afterwards, after having shooting it. In the case of I don't know, that's mean that I wonder how he prepared these films. I suppose I maybe because they are so musical, maybe he has a certain way of, well, there was a script obviously with dialogues and so on, but I would imagine that maybe like how do you call a music sheet, maybe he was working a bit that way, like what is has to be high light, what has to be less, and so on. So maybe he was thinking in the editing in that way while preparing the film and shooting it, maybe that way. Regarding his films, I know from the 80s, like the Three Crowns of a Sailor, for instance, or the City of Pirates. I think because there was also very a lot of very how do you say precise and strange shots that would made like with a half so this kind of thing. It couldn't change so much the structure afterwards because they had to be there, and then it's like if I'm sure he was not doing any storyboard, but slightly a bit of that in these films that makes them slightly rigid, maybe in a way. And maybe because of this way of shooting, he couldn't really change so much the but I don't know, maybe it's not a joke from him, but a way to say there is the best way of editing it, and that's it. In that way, it's just one edit, the one editing possible. But I don't know exactly. That's true. That's quite strange. In the case of Mystery of Lisbon, because they are long wide shots, very perfectly choreographically, and with the camera movement. I suppose he has really the construction had been done before on paper, and then he was able to make it really to shot it so precisely that he didn't need to change the structure. I don't know, but that's strange, in fact.
May I ask, in your own films, in your own work, what is your relationship to editing? Do you feel that it's a more playful period in post-production, or do you also like to have it very clearly planned before editing?
I wish I could be so good so I can so clearly plan it before. No, but I love editing. I think it's a very joyful, well, even if you see all your mistakes, which is not very joyful, but it's a very playful moment, and you can be and I love to be alone or alone with my editor in the editing room, and it didn't happen that I changed so much the structure, for instance, with the films. Sometimes it's also because I didn't have so much time to shoot neither, but what I but then the rhythm really of a film, I found it in the editing room. Even so, it's not something I can, or sometimes I have a few too many shots, so I have to choose, but it's also slightly on purpose. I don't do so many takes, but I rather do more shots to be able to play with that. And but yes, it's well, with a film like and also my films are apart from Eowyn, they are very linear in terms of time. And but with Eowyn, I had this bit games with a past or a parallel time, so I could play a bit more at the editing, and I could have changed things more than in the other films. And it's something I would love to do, something that has to do with a discontinuity of time. I just have to find the right story for that, but
Can I ask you what you're currently working on?
I'm now editing a film that I have just shot this winter, and it's very loosely inspired by the Snow Queen, Andersen's Elle, but it's in the real world, at least at the beginning, or it tried to be in the real world, and then slightly goes in more somewhere else. And it's again about an orphan girl who is, well, it's a coming of age story, and she well, she's not a child, she's a teenager, and she left her little foyer, her little orphanage in the mountains to go to the city and to live an adult life, and she will meet Snow Queen there. There is a film within the film, so she ends up in a film studio where she meet both the Snow Queen and the actress who play the Snow Queen. So there is the reality, and then the other world, the artificial world, and then it mixed, of course, and
We're really looking forward to seeing the new film. We were huge fans of Earwig and all of your work that we've enjoyed watching over the years. When can we look for the new film? Do you have an idea?
Next year.
Oh, okay, next year it will be out. All right, perfect.
We are going to finish the post-production this fall, I suppose, and we'll see.
Wonderful.
And I know, oh, go ahead, Frank, sorry.
No, go after you.
I was just going to say, I know that you're an active member of the Collective 50-50, so in English, Collective 50-50. Could you give us an update maybe about how the work is going? What are things like right now?
I am not an active member of
Oh,
this
okay.
collective. I think it's of course it is necessary. It's that women can have access to making films and being and working in all departments of making films, because it's about cinema, this collective, and it's also and there is now today a lot of I say that, so we had a few, at least, for instance, actresses in their case that spoke about their difficult, if not very frightened experience of being young actresses on set, for instance, like Judith Godrèche or and a few others. And now the Center of Cinema is trying to find rules to prot about to protect not only women but just people more on sets, especially other people and so on. So that's now actually the more recent debate. It's about how do can we deal with that? How could you do you, should you have somewhat a referent for against that can you can go to speak to if you feel there is some harassment of that kind on set, but how is it the best way to do about that? So that in this moment it's a lot of about that, and about of course encouraging women to be to hire more women on sets and so on. And then I think it's a bit tricky. I mean, it's difficult to find the right ways to achieve that without not being exclusive in other ways. I think it's complex, and sometimes it's, you know, recently it's also, there are so many talk and events about women filmmakers, and at certain point it felt a bit like being put in a box also, like to it's I think it's I don't know, maybe also because in France we are pretty, it seems so, it's not that the in fact the number says not that exactly, but it seems that there are some already more and more women, female directors and female DPs or sound engineer, or but not still enough. So sure, there is ways to, but also it's just a reflection of what the society is. It's not specifically just. And then when it's come to cinema, to art, it's difficult. For instance, the society of quotas and. I don't know. It's difficult to find the right ways to, and there's a lot of discussion about that. So this is what I can say. And the sometimes the collective 50-50. I don't know. The idea is very good, but sometimes the means are. I don't know, so confident about the means to achieve that. So that's why I'm not an active member of that. But.
But thank you for your work in this arena. Even if we don't know what the right answers and solutions are, at
No,
least we ask the question.
exactly. No, and become conscious of the fact that, because for a long time I wouldn't have thought that I had difficulties to make my film because I was a woman, and I still think not only about that, but nevertheless, it's probably part of the problem too. So.
We usually like to close the podcast by asking our guest if there is a question that we haven't asked that we should have asked. So is there something you wish we had asked?
About Raoul Ruiz,
Yes.
no, it's about the maybe the how prolific he was. How is it possible? How is it possible to being doing a film each day, making, I mean, making or writing or editing? How is it possible? And at the same time, you feel that it's so human. It's not like someone is, his films are very moving and very touching and very universal. And then he was just living a life of cinema entirely. And certainly I didn't know him personally. I just met him in a few occasions, but in a festival or something like that. But I felt it was a very, very human person that who lives only by cinema, and that's also a mystery. How can you be able to live such a life? Is it has it to do with his exile? So I guess his home was the cinema, and well, that's what I would say. And I apologize for my very poor and broken English. Hope you
Oh, not
understand
at all.
You shouldn't.
what I'm saying. And I very much hope that they will have a desire to discover, if they don't know him, if they don't know this film in particular, but also all this iceberg, this huge, huge, huge body of films that the. That how we had.
Thank you so much for this beautiful discussion of Raul Ruiz and also your own work. We hope that all of our listeners will dive into the filmography of Ruiz and also your own films, and we will look forward to your newest film coming soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to After Images. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and follow After Images Podcast on social media.